With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Renaissance English History Podcast, a member of the Agora Podcast Network. I'm your host, Heather Tusco, and I'm a storyteller who makes history accessible because I believe it's a pathway to understanding who we are, our place in the universe, and deepening our connection to our own humanity. This is episode 108. It's another joint episode with Melita Thomas from Tudor Times on Mary, the French Queen, Henry VIII's sister, who famously married for love. But first, admin. I want to thank the lovely patrons of this show who helped to keep it independent. Thank you to Elizabeth, Kathy, Cynthia, Jurgen, Sarah, Megan, Melissa, Lady Anne, aka Jessica, Olivia, Al, Ashley, Kendra, Cynthia, Judith, Renee, Katie, Mara, Emily, Selene, Lara, Ian, Barbara, Shar, Kiva, Amy, Allison, Joanna, Kathy, Christine, Annetta, that's my mama, Susan, Andrea, Catherine, Rebecca from Tudor's Dynasty, Shandor, Philip, and John. To learn more about how you can become a part of this intelligent and discerning group of people for as little as a dollar an episode, go to patreon.com/englandcast. Also, I've got a hugely important crowdfunding campaign on at the moment. I'm raising funds to pay for the printing of the 2019 Tudor Planner, which is the weekly monthly planner diary that's filled with Tudor history, all wrapped up in a cover that looks like an illuminated manuscript. There are a number of changes and improvements this coming year, largely based on your feedback, and my printing costs have gone up. So I have an Indiegogo campaign running for about 3 more weeks. The link to that is at englandcast.com or on the Facebook page. There are some awesome perks that you get for coming in as an early backer. In addition to my everlasting thanks, there is actually like stuff and bonuses and prizes that you get, depending on which level you choose. Thank you so much for your support. We're just 1 week in and already 35% funded, and I'm thrilled with the response and so grateful to everybody who got behind this project early on. So now let me introduce you to Melita. Melita Thomas is a co-founder and editor of Tudor Times, a website devoted to Tudor and Stuart history in the period from 1485 to 1625. You can find it at tudortimes.co.uk. Melita, who has always been fascinated by history ever since she saw the 1970s series Elizabeth R with Glenda Jackson, also contributes articles to BBC History Extra and Britain Magazine. I really don't know much about Mary, and it seems like there's a lot of recent stuff, a couple of books and stuff that have come out about her. So it seems like she's becoming more popular, I suppose, at least, I don't know, maybe I'm just finally noticing it.
Well, sort of, I mean, I think these things go through fashions, don't they? People become interested in somebody in particular, and there'll be a spate of books about them, and then attention turns to somebody else. Mary's always been considered quite a romantic figure, I think. So there were a couple of sort of romance books about her during the Victorian period, and because she chose to marry without formal consent from Henry VIII, and she married for love, which was very unusual in those days. She's always been considered rather romantic, and she was also particularly beautiful, apparently, which I know all princesses are called beautiful, but Mary seems to have been outstandingly good looking.
Yeah. So what can you tell me about her early life as a princess and before the first marriage and her childhood?
Well, her early childhood it started out, she was born in 1495, 6, check that. she was born in March. And it was just in the period when Henry VII was beset by the Perkin Warbeck troubles. So one of Mary's earliest memories will have been being taken to the Tower as a protection when the Cornish rebels were encamped at Blackheath. So Elizabeth of York and her children went to the Tower to keep them safe. Whether Mary will have remembered that is she was very young, but Henry VIII is thought to have been quite badly traumatized by it. So her very early childhood, she was surrounded with love and affection. She had two parents. She had several brothers and sisters. She spent most of her time at Eltham Palace with Henry and Margaret. Prince Arthur was brought up separately. Her mother was probably closer to her than most royal mothers are. And there's quite a few examples of Elizabeth visiting the children and sending presents for them. And I mean, Henry VII too was quite a doting father. He paid for her lute, and yeah, I mean, obviously he paid for everything for her because he was her father and the king. But you know, there are elements of sort of personal touch in the accounts. And then it all started to go sour in 1499. There was the first death. Her little brother Edmund died at aged 18 months. So he died in 1500, I think. Then there was this spectacular marriage of her brother Arthur to Princess Catherine. So that was a bit of a high point. Mary, who was 7 by then, she had a couple of new dresses for the occasion. So you can imagine she had one of crimson velvet and one of russet velvet. So, you know, they were dressed like little adults. But then Arthur died within a few months. And the following year, Mary's mother died in childbirth. So from a sort of very sunny early childhood, it then became quite depressing as Henry VII, I mean, who wouldn't suffer from depression if they lost two children and their wife, and then Margaret, the older daughter, went off to Scotland. So everything became really rather somber. Matters picked up a bit in the middle years, 1504 to 1507, and Mary became the focus of attention as she was betrothed to the Archduke Charles. And he was later the Emperor Charles V. So it went through the usual negotiations for these kinds of marriages. There was a treaty, and there were proxy marriages, and finally a huge ceremony where Mary was the centre of attention. She kept the audience waiting apparently for 3 hours until she came in dressed in her golden frock. And was married by proxy to the Archduke Charles. So she could anticipate that one day she would be Queen of Spain, Duchess of Burgundy, and probably Empress. So she was then referred to from that time forward, from 1507, as the Princess of Castile. So all of the court papers refer to her as the Princess of Castile. The other thing around that period, there were a number of different banquets and jousts and all those sorts of things to celebrate. And she would preside as the lady of the joust and give the prizes. And it's probably around that sort of time that she first became aware of a young man at court, Charles Brandon, who was a very fine jouster.
Mm. Yes. So then tell me about what happened after Henry VII's death, and how did the Castile marriage kind of fall apart then too? How did we get to France?
Well, Henry VII died in 1509, and he left orders that the marriage should go ahead. And if it didn't, he made separate arrangements for her dowry and so forth. And for the first few years of Henry VIII's reign, Mary spent her time at court with Henry and Catherine. She was on very good terms with her sister-in-law, and they seem to have been, you know, had quite a jolly time, the three of them, dancing and jousting and so forth. Then in 1513... Henry, allied to Catherine's father, Ferdinand of Aragon, Maximilian of Austria, who was Archduke Charles's grandfather, as was Ferdinand, and Marguerite, who was Charles's aunt and regent for him in the Netherlands, they formed an alliance to invade France. So Henry thought this was a hell of a fine idea. Mm-hmm. And off he went to France, and he captured a couple of towns, later referred to by Thomas Cromwell as ungracious dog holes. But yes, he was quite proud of himself. So that all seemed to be going swimmingly, and it was agreed that Mary and Charles would be married the following year. Mm-hmm. But then, as happened to Henry on more than one occasion, Ferdinand and Maximilian double-crossed him, effectively. Right. They each made a secret alliance with France, or a secret peace. And Henry was, you know, obviously he found out about this, and he started pushing for the marriage for Mary and Charles to take place, as had been agreed. And Archduchess Marguerite, she was very keen as well, and Mary was fitted out with all her clothes and her jewels, and Henry spent a fortune on it. But Maximilian and Charles just dragged their feet, and they wouldn't come to the party. They kept putting it off. So Henry then thought, OK, well, I know how to get my own back. So he made a separate treaty with Louis Louis of France, for Mary to marry him.
Mm.
And Mary, there she was. She was 18 by now and used to thinking of herself as Princess of Castile. But, you know, the humiliation of the situation must have been quite stinging for her, really. She was, you know, being treated very badly. So she publicly renounced her betrothal to Charles and was betrothed by proxy to Louis. Now, Charles was 4 years younger than Mary, but Louis was 30 years older than her. So yeah. he was 52 and she was 18.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But before we have her go to France, though, what was her relationship like with Catherine of Aragon? Do we have any kind of idea of if they were close? I'm thinking if they both would have been from that Spanish, you know, the Princess of Castile and everything like that. Were they close friends?
They seem to have been, yes. Obviously you don't know about sort of people's personal emotions, but Mary was always with Catherine and Henry. I'm presuming that if Catherine hadn't liked her, she would have made other arrangements, mm-hmm. because Henry at that time, you know, would have done anything to please his wife. Mm-hmm. So Mary was, I think they probably thought of themselves as sisters. I mean, Mary probably could hardly remember a time before Catherine mm-hmm. had been in her life. She'd only been, you know, six or so when Catherine arrived.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so they yeah. And, you know, I would guess they thought of themselves more or less as sisters.
Yeah. I often think about, you know, when Henry was double crossed, the awkward position that put Catherine in, and Mary was in the same kind of position from a different perspective. I'm looking at your website here and going into the story about Charles Brandon and Marguerite. Can you give a little backstory on that?
Yeah. Well, Charles, we have to think that Charles was probably quite a good looking and attractive chap, mm-hmm. but he was certainly a man who was ambitious, and he was perfectly happy in the way of the times to marry to secure his ambitions. I mean, he'd had a bit of a checkered marital career. He had been betrothed to a woman called Anne Brown, and then they'd had a child, but they'd apparently not been married. But then he threw her over for her aunt, who had an inheritance. And then that marriage was dissolved and he married Anne.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And then after the death of both Anne and her sister, her Aunt Margaret, he was betrothed to a young girl, Elizabeth Grey, who was Viscountess Lisle.
Mm.
And he went off to the court of the Archduchess Marguerite, and they began what you might call a court flirtation, presumably. And it became serious enough for there to be rumours that Marguerite would marry Charles. Now, Marguerite, she'd been twice widowed. Her first marriage had been to Catherine of Aragon's brother,
mm-hmm.
but he'd died young. And then she'd married the Duke of Savoy, and he had also died fairly young, and mm-hmm. she'd had no children. So she was only, I suppose, in her 30s. So she was, you know, probably liked the sight of a young man as much as anybody. But of course, she wasn't going to marry,
right?
You know, one of Henry VIII's friends with no background, no breeding, no fortune, no title, no name. It was around this time that Henry made him a duke, which was a leap from plain Sir Charles, and he was born just plain Mister, right up to the top of the aristocratic tree. It's possible he thought that that might tempt Marguerite to marry his friend. Marguerite's father, Maximilian, was absolutely outraged at the idea. apart from anything, he seems to have accepted that his daughter didn't want to remarry anybody in particular, you know, at all. And the very idea that she might change her mind and marry some upstart just horrified the emperor.
So
Marguerite was clearly embarrassed by the whole thing, and she asked Henry to make sure that Charles didn't come near her court until he was married to his fiancée, Lady Lyle. Scandal rocked the court of the Netherlands.
And Anne Boleyn potentially would have seen that, huh?
Yes, possibly, yes. So Anne was obviously one of Marguerite's ladies-in-waiting or maids of honour, so aged about 14 at the time, 13 or 14. So she would have seen the chivalric sort of codes of honour and people pretending to be in love and sighing at each other and giving each other, you know, poems and all that sort of thing. So whether she then saw how badly it could go wrong if people overstepped the mark, which of course is what happened to her when she and Norris, she overstepped the mark with what she said to Norris.
Right. Okay. So then let's take her to France. And, you know, this, like you said, it's such a romantic story, and this is a story that certainly people who watched a particular series will know her by a different name and a different country and all of that, but might have been familiar with the story of it, at least, even though the names have been changed and the countries have been changed. But what can you tell me about the whole French debacle and you know, that how it all happened, how it played out?
Yeah, well, it started out very, from the point of view of what it was intended to do, it went very well. So Mary arrived in France, having extracted apparently from her brother a promise that if she was widowed young, that she could choose a second husband herself. And it was fairly widely known that Louis wasn't in the pink of health. So I think she had a fairly good chance of being widowed.
Why would Henry have agreed to that?
I'm guessing he agreed to it just to keep her quiet, I would have thought. Yeah,
given that he didn't have an heir yet, it seems like, you know, women were valuable for their marriage negotiation or relationships internationally and things like that. Like, seems like a really big thing for him to have promised that she could choose her own husband, given that he didn't have many children to play the marriage game with.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think in his younger days, he was perhaps more romantically minded, and he was almost certainly assuming that he would have sons, because it was 1514. Catherine had lost two, possibly three children by this point, but he was still optimistic that that children would come along. I think he possibly thought that the situation would never actually arise. I mean, if Mary had had children in France, she'd have been the mother of the Queen of France, the King of France. You know, the likelihood that she would then have married, it possibly wouldn't have been his concern in a sense, if she'd had children. I think Mary was, you get the impression she was quite as impulsive as her brother and sister were, Henry and Margaret. Henry seems to have been fond of Mary. A marriage couldn't take place without consent. It's possible, although it doesn't seem very likely, that Mary said she would absolutely refuse to publicly consent unless he had made this promise. Perhaps he thought you know, she might cause embarrassment. I don't know, a combination of things. Probably, I would guess ultimately in a weak moment, he saw his sister and said and promised her whatever she wanted to, you know, just get her to do what he wanted.
Yeah. And they would have been close then, having grown up together. It would have been a different kind of relationship than some royal. For example, if he would have been raised in Wales as the Prince of Wales, it might have been different.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's true. And she, as I said before, she lived with her, Henry and Catherine. They saw each other every day. They were, all, you know, all the time. And they were clearly, you know, attached to each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so there she is, and she's going to France, and it all looks like it's going to be good. And then it's not.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
It is good as Queen of France. I mean, she arrives in France. Louis meets her, you know, the usual story of having come across her accidentally whilst out hunting, and mm-hmm. they just happen to have the same coloured outfits on. And the French fashion was to wear matching his and hers outfits for the king and queen. Yes.
Isn't that nice?
She impressed everybody who saw her with how beautiful she was, how gracious she was, how lovely she was to her fiance, and they got married quite quickly at near Abbeville. And yes, she was an absolute model of good behaviour as the Queen of France. She sat beside her husband when he was ill. She, you know, sort of fed him with her own hands, all that sort of care that she took of him. She was crowned as Queen of France in St. Denis. And, mm-hmm. You know, had Louis lived, she would have gone on being Queen of France and being, you know, admired for her looks. And Louis seemed to dote on her. Apart from the fact that he sent away most of her ladies in waiting because, in particular, he didn't like her chief lady, Lady Gifford, who was sort of the maternal figure, the head of the ladies in waiting. Mm. And Louis felt that she hovered about far too much when he wanted to be merry with his wife. Yeah, so that upset Mary. She wrote home to Wolsey and to Henry saying, please, could they talk to the king and have Lady Gifford reinstated, but if they did, they didn't press the point because she wasn't. So I mean, it all could have gone well. I mean, hovering on the edges were Louis's daughter Claude and her husband Francois, who was Louis's heir, because Claude, who was Anne of Brittany's daughter, couldn't inherit the crown of France. She had been married to Louis's heir, much to her mother's disappointment, as we discussed previously. Mm-hmm. So Francois was champing at the bit to be king, and Claude was probably champing at the bit to be queen consort, even if she couldn't be queen regnant. Had Mary had a son, of course, they would have been demoted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But Louis, besotted with his wife, sat up late at night eating and drinking and making merry, and wore himself out, and he was dead within a couple of months, 3 months. He died on New Year's Day. Yes. So from that perspective, it went badly, in that having been 3 months Queen of France, she was now widowed,
mm-hmm.
and in a very vulnerable position, because Francois, although he couldn't immediately be proclaimed as king, because had Mary been expecting a child, they'd have had to wait to see if it had been a boy.
Right.
Francois effectively became king, and he wasn't quite sure how to handle her. She had to be she went into her 40 days of mourning as the White Queen, but you know, Francois was eager to know if she was pregnant, and he apparently took the opportunity to make suggestions to her that Mary complained to her brother were not to her honour. Yeah, Francois was a notorious lecher, so we can mm-hmm. imagine what the suggestions were. Mm-hmm. And he then also tried to put pressure on her to marry one of his French nobles. He wanted her to marry the Duke of Savoy,
mm-hmm.
but she got letters from Henry and Wolsey saying, you know, don't even think about getting involved in a French marriage. Mm-hmm. To which she wrote back, well, you know, she was quite cross that they thought she was so foolish as to get involved in Francois's schemes. Mm-hmm.
So she could see through it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So then how do we get Charles Brandon in here?
Well, Charles had been one of the people who accompanied Mary in the first place to France. So Charles and also Mary's cousin, Thomas Grey, Marquess of Dorset, and, you know, the various other royals and nobles had come to France with her and, you know, gone to a couple of tournaments and generally shown themselves off and made friends with the French court. Louis had spoken very highly of Charles, saying, you know, that he was a very good servant to Henry and deserved to be favoured. And obviously, you know, the man made a good impression. Mm-hmm. And then Henry decided to send Charles to go and fetch Mary. Again, it seems like an odd decision to make if, I mean, the whole thing sort of centres around how much Henry knew about the fact that Mary was attached to Suffolk. I'm not convinced it was entirely a two-way street, but Mary was certainly, you know, possibly you could even say she had a crush on him. I mean, she was 18 and he was 30. No doubt he did think she was attractive. So Henry sent him Suffolk to France, but he made him promise that he wouldn't propose to Mary. He didn't make him promise not to marry her, but he made him promise not to propose.
So where would that have even come from, say, having him make that promise?
Well, so obviously shows that then it must have been an open secret that there was some kind of relationship or affection between Charles and Mary. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Henry must have known about it. But so then you put those things together. You put the fact that Henry had promised she could marry a man of her choice, and he sent Suffolk to her, knowing that she was in love with him. You know, you have to think that Henry thought it might happen.
Right.
And yet, as you said before, why would he allow his sister, who could be useful to him, to marry Charles? Mm-hmm. I mean. Perhaps he wanted to show his power over Charles by saying, you know, don't propose to her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's an interesting conundrum. Or perhaps he just did love his sister and want her to be happy. It's not the picture we necessarily have of Henry, but maybe she was one of his weak points. He could be very affectionate towards his family.
Mm-hmm. And so tell me, where did they get married and what happened? What happened when it all came out?
So Charles raced over to France, having promised that he wouldn't propose. And at the same time, Mary was under pressure from Francois to pick a French husband. And she panicked, possibly. She thought that Francois would actually hold her in France. So she pleaded with Charles to marry her. And according to his report, he never saw woman weep so. And said that if he wouldn't marry her, she would actually take the veil and become a nun, and then she wouldn't be able to marry anybody. And at the same time, she obviously thought, you know, what's the best way to get my own way here? And she thought, well, if I can get Francois on side, that would help. So thinking that Francois mainly wanted her to marry one of his supporters so that Henry wouldn't marry her to, you know, somebody important, she persuaded Francois to support a marriage to Charles. And Francois, thinking that he was now getting one over on Henry and also taking Mary kind of off the table as a pawn, said, okay, I'll help you out. So he attended a second secret marriage between the two and promised to write to Henry on their behalf to mitigate whatever punishment Henry came up with.
What was it like when they went back then?
Well, Henry apparently, you know, threw his toys out of the pram completely when he was told about the marriage. So yeah, it is all very hazy, and it's quite difficult to see a clear motivation from Henry. He seems to be vacillating about the whole thing. But anyway, he was persuaded. Mary deluged him with letters. Charles deluged him with letters. Wolsey, for whatever reason, Wolsey had decided that he would speak for them. And Henry was talked around. And the way they talked him around was that old favourite money.
Yeah.
Mary had a huge dower as Queen Dowager of France. Henry said, well, okay then, I'll accept your marriage, but you're going to have to give me 2/3 of your income as Dowager Queen of France and all your jewels and all the other debts that Charles already owes me for this, that and the other.
Yeah.
So they bought their pardon.
Mm. And so then they were able to return to court and come
Yes,
home.
Had a, yet another marriage ceremony. Henry and probably Catherine were concerned, you know, to make sure that it didn't look too much like a, you know, some sort of hole in the corner affair, and that the marriage was a public event and couldn't be questioned. I mean, the worst thing would be if Mary had had a child and people had questioned the legitimacy of the marriage because, you know, there'd been no public ceremony. So there was a third marriage at Greenwich.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then they really were married.
Yeah, for real. So then tell me about what their relationship was like after they came home. And again, in that particular television series, you see a lot of stuff there's a lot of drama sometimes with them in terms of like Charles Brandon not being a very nice husband and having a lot of affairs and leaving Mary back at home and all of that. Like what was it like for real?
Well, of course, you know, you never know the inner state of people's emotions. It would appear, as far as you can detect from the evidence, from the first few for the first few years, so say 15, 14 to say, you know, maybe 15, 20, 21, they seem to have spent a fair bit of time together, quite often in London. They were still members of the court, and although they were hard up and didn't live there permanently, you know, they attended most of the big ceremonies of that went on. They were there at the betrothal of Princess Mary in 1518 to the Dauphin of France. They were part of the entourage that went to the Field of Cloth of Gold, mm-hmm. where Mary, of course, as Dowager Queen of France, you know, she played quite an important role in that. So during those years, they appear to have been quite close. Mary started to suffer from ill health quite soon. She had four children in total. The first one, Henry, Earl of Lincoln, was born about a year after their marriage. Then she had two daughters, Frances and Eleanor. And then the young Earl, Henry, he died in 1522. And she had another son the following year, also confusingly called Henry, Earl of Lincoln. Yeah. And there's a couple of mentions where Charles says is writing to Wolsey and saying, well, I was going to come to see you, but my wife was sick and she felt so ill. She called me back because she, you know, she didn't want me to leave her side because she was too ill. Again, you know, you certainly get the impression that she was very keen on him. Yeah, you just don't know what his situation was emotionally. And then after, say, 15, 22, 23, they seem to spend less time together. Possibly the death of their son was a factor in that. I mean, it's a terrible thing. And it wasn't like a very young baby. I mean, he was 6 or 7. So you can imagine, not that I'm saying that losing a baby is terrible, but at 6 or 7, it must have been particularly difficult because you'd have thought mostly by that age they were past the most dangerous years. The year after, as I say, she had another child, but then her health seems to have deteriorated. He spent more time at court, and then of course the whole annulment issue started to raise its ugly head from sort of 1526-7 onwards.
Right.
Now the indication seems to be that neither Charles nor Mary liked Anne Boleyn at all. And that Mary in particular, probably it's hardly surprising that she was going to side with Catherine. Now, Mary, Anne Boleyn had probably been one of her own ladies or own maids of honour. So you can imagine that she wasn't terribly pleased at the thought of her underling replacing mm-hmm. her sister-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you get the impression that there was a long, lingering, slow decline in Mary's health through the late 1520s. She was she spent quite a lot of time going to various religious establishments and being quite perhaps a more religious woman than her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you get the impression they just grew apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so then so when did she die, and how did it end?
Yeah, so Catherine and Henry, well, the annulment finally was legislated for in England in April and May of 1533, by which time Mary was terminally ill,
mm-hmm.
And again, we don't know what she had. It was over a long period. There were, even from the early 1510, the late 1510. So I don't know, tuberculosis, possibly, yeah. Possibly cancer. Catherine was finally cast off and Anne Boleyn was proclaimed as queen. Charles was Lord Steward and he had some significant responsibilities around arranging Anne's coronation, mm-hmm. which Mary didn't attend, probably quite apart from anything else. She would have been too ill by the 1st of June. Charles paid her a visit in May, but he didn't come back in June and he wasn't there when she died. Mm. He didn't attend the funeral, but that was normal. Husbands didn't attend their wives' funerals. That was pretty standard. But he consoled himself within 6 weeks by marrying Catherine Willoughby.
Right.
His 14-year-old ward, who was betrothed to the young Earl of Lincoln.
Isn't that convenient?
Yeah, I know. It must have been tough for him, that one.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's not like, you know, many people married quite quickly, but this does seem particularly tasteless, mm-hmm. especially since she was betrothed to his son, who did in fact die young, but hadn't died by that point.
Yeah. What did people think about it when that happened? Like, was it gossip?
Yeah, there were a couple of snarky remarks in some of the ambassadors' reports, but possibly because Mary had been away from court for so long, people didn't really talk about it that much. And there is one quite interesting throwaway remark that it seldom seems to be picked up on. Anne Boleyn at one point, and I think it must have been about 1531 or 32, apparently accused Charles of molesting his daughter.
Oh.
And she doesn't say who, but of course Catherine Willoughby would have been called Charles's daughter because she was due to marry his son. And it seems to me more likely, I mean, who knows, that that Catherine had been the lucky recipients of her future father-in-law's attentions rather than Charles's own daughters. But who knows?
He's horrible.
Well, we don't know that's true. Anne Boleyn said some pretty harsh things about quite a few people. Sure. She was obviously a woman with a knack for sharp remarks. So yeah. She might have, but it's an odd thing to come up with completely out of the blue. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that would be my guess that he'd already shown an interest in the girl. Yeah.
Well, where can people learn more about Mary if they want to dig deeper into her life?
There's the latest biography is by a lady called Sarah Bryson. There's one published a few years ago, a joint biography with her sister Margaret, Queen of Scots, by Mariah Perry. There's a very, very detailed Victorian one, but still very good, Mary Ann Everett Wood, who wrote some very good stuff. She did a lot of historical research, and it's contained in a volume called Lives of the Princesses of England, I think. Erin Sadler, an American academic, has done an academic study of her letters, you know, brought them all together and catalogued them and, you know, very, very detailed study of those. There's a biography by Stephen Gunn published a couple of years ago, I think, on Charles, but that's very much about Charles and his political role. And I think Mary gets, you know, half a dozen mentions, doesn't talk about their relationship.
Yeah. And then, of course, your Tudor Times site. What's like her legacy? Why is she worth learning about?
I think she's interesting because it did show that a woman who could stand up against the convention of the time and choose a husband if she was prepared to, you know, take a gamble and go through with it. I mean, it was a huge gamble. Henry might have taken far more drastic action than he did, although we have to think of Henry in his early days. He, you know, although the odd head had disappeared, you know, been struck off by now, they weren't flying out at every angle at the time that Mary married Charles. I suppose she's interesting because that makes her a real person with real emotions and real feelings about her life. And it's probably a fairly early example of people thinking that love is a good basis for marriage. You know, the convention was that you married somebody and then you fell in love with them. And that and you were supposed to, that was it. You were supposed to love your spouse, but you didn't love your spouse until after you married them. So she's a very early example of saying, no, actually, I'm going to marry the person I love.
Good on her.
Yeah. Well, yes, though I wonder, you know, later when she's hard up for cash, because they're always hard up because of, you know, I mean, in relative terms, but she certainly didn't live as a queen dowager, whether occasionally when she made the visits to court, she thought that she'd made the right decision. I don't know, because, you know, especially when in the later years when Charles perhaps didn't treat her that well. Although, as I say, we can't know that. We can only infer from, you know, and I think the hasty remarriage gives an idea. Because she could have been an empress. And, it, you know, it's, what do they say? Love flies out the window when poverty comes in the door.
Thank you again to Melita Thomas for taking the time to tell us about Mary, the French Queen. For more information, go to tudortimes.co.uk or see the resources available on the Englandcast site at englandcast.com. And remember to please support the Tudor Planner if you love planning and Tudors. And you can get the links to that Indiegogo campaign at englandcast.com or on the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/englandcast. Thank you so much in advance. I'll be back again in about 2 weeks. The next episode I'm going to do is on the menagerie at the Tower. You knew there was a zoo at the Tower, right? With gifts of exotic animals from foreign dignitaries and kings and everything like that. So I'm going to do an episode on the menagerie at the Tower. Something I've always wanted to know about. So there we go. All right. Thanks so much for listening. I will be back in 2 more weeks. Bye-bye. Sinful maybe sweating, blown on wind.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.